In the heart of Ljubljana, Slovenia, a 24-year-old woman named Veronica methodically prepares for her final act. Her room is clean, her suicide note, bizarrely addressed to a magazine that couldn't locate her country on a map, is written, and four packs of sleeping pills wait to be consumed. What's striking isn't her despair, but her detachment. She isn't overwhelmingly sad. She simply concluded that life offers nothing but deterioration and repetition. Why endure decades more of meaningless existence? As the pills take effect and consciousness begins to slip away, something unexpected happens. Genuine emotion flickers through her. Fear, desire, and regret surface briefly before darkness falls. It's a profound irony. In choosing death, Veronica experiences more authentic feeling than she allowed herself in life. When she awakens, fluorescent lights blind her, tubes invade her nose and mouth, and her arms are strapped down. She's in Villette, Slovenia's infamous asylum, a place where the genuinely mentally ill mingle with those merely hiding from creditors or criminal charges. And then comes the devastating news. The pills have irreversibly damaged her heart. She has only 5 days to live. Her suicide attempt has succeeded after all, just not in the way she planned. Villette serves as both institution and metaphor for society. Founded after Slovenia's 1991 independence, the facility exemplifies capitalism's dark side. European investors transformed old barracks into a profitable venture by accepting any committed patients. Despite exposed abuse and investigations, Villette persisted through shareholder leverage, threatening that closure would signal hostility toward foreign investment. Inside, the line between sanity and madness dissolves. Patient Zedka defines insanity as living in one's own world, sharing a parable where a kingdom's population drinks poisoned water and goes mad except the royal family. When people rebel, the monarchs drink too, becoming wise by conforming, illustrating how sanity is defined by consensus rather than reality. The fraternity reveals a paradox. Patients who could leave choose to stay because Villette allows authentic self-expression without judgment. By accepting the insane label, they find freedom, while those outside remain constrained by social norms. The asylum's walls become less a prison than a refuge from society's demands. Mari's story shows how conventional life can become an asylum. A successful lawyer, she experienced her first panic attack while watching a film about El Salvador, just as she considered leaving law for humanitarian work. Her body and mind rebelled against decades of conformity through overwhelming terror. Though medical tests showed nothing wrong, Mari's reputation crumbled. Colleagues pushed her to retire, and her husband filed for divorce. Despite improving with medication, she chose to stay at Villette, finding solace where breaking rules had fewer consequences. The legal system she once served now represented everything wrong with society, too many rules and regulations stifling authentic expression. Edward's story similarly shows how society pathologizes nonconformity. A diplomat's son in Brazil, he discovered his passion for painting visions of paradise through studying historical visionaries. When his parents emotionally pleaded for him to return to his studies, Edward, torn between family duty and personal passion, destroyed his paintings and withdrew mentally. Diagnosed with schizophrenia, he entered Villette during Yugoslavia's dissolution. Both cases demonstrate how mental illness often represents rebellion against artificial constraints, the authentic self fighting to emerge from society's expectations. One night, Veronica finds a piano in the asylum's lounge. She pounds the keys, releasing years of suppressed hatred for herself, her mother's guilt-inducing love, her distant father, the education system, and hollow book explanations. With each strike, her hatred dissolves into peace. She then plays a beautiful sonata for the night sky. Edward, a silent schizophrenic patient, appears and smiles at her playing, showing how music can reach even his remote world. Through this artistic connection, Veronica realizes she's finally living her dream, playing with pure feeling, regardless of audience. That her only listener is a young schizophrenic doesn't matter. He understands the music. This musical rediscovery symbolizes Veronica's renewed connection with life as she faces death. Though her talent was recognized by her teacher, her practical mother had pushed her toward law instead. "I should have been crazier," she reflects. Music becomes her authentic voice, a language that bridges sanity and insanity when conventional communication fails. Following Mari's advice, Veronica boldly undresses before Edward and explores self-pleasure, experiencing multiple orgasms while embracing her liberation from social constraints. Later, Edward breaks his years of silence to call her name as nurses take him for electroconvulsive therapy, a moment marking his reawakening to life. Together, they escape Filat for an expensive restaurant in Ljubljana, indulging in fine food and wine. In the city square, Veronica's sobriety returns with memories of her impending death. Atop the castle hill, she makes Edward promise to return to painting, finding meaning in helping him rediscover his path. Their relationship intensifies without time for conventional courtship. By choosing to spend Veronica's final hours embracing pleasure and love rather than waiting passively for death, they assert control over their lives. Their love becomes an affirmation of life's value, proving authentic connection emerges when social pretenses fall away. When Edward awakens the next morning, he momentarily believes Veronica has died, but she stirs and opens her eyes. When she asks what's happening, Edward helps her to her feet and declares it a miracle, another day of life. Meanwhile, Dr. Igor arrives at his office, learning that Edward and Veronica have disappeared. Alone, he smiles, realizing his experiment has succeeded. He had been using Veronica as a test subject, administering phenytoin to simulate heart attacks while studying his cure for vitriol, bitterness, an awareness of death to encourage living more intensely. She was never dying. Only her old self was dying to make way for authentic living. Most surprising was how his cure spread through Villette, with Mari requesting discharge to work with children in Bosnia and others wanting their cases reviewed. Though ethically questionable, Dr. Igor's experiment succeeded beyond expectations. By confronting Veronica with mortality, he awakened her to life's preciousness and possibilities. Edward awakens to a policeman suggesting they seek shelter. He fears Veronica has died until she stirs and opens her eyes. When she asks what's happening, he helps her up and declares a miracle, another day of life. Dr. Igor's cure transforms Villette's residence. Mari leaves to work with children in Bosnia. Zetka returns to the world with renewed perspective, and Edward breaks his silence to reclaim his art. Their witness to Veronica's journey awakens them to life's precious brevity. Edward's declaration marks both Veronica's survival and spiritual rebirth. Though she'll later learn she isn't dying, her transformation endures. Having lived each day as her last, she now sees every morning as miraculous. We all share Veronica's diagnosis. Life itself is terminal. Yet most people ignore this truth, filling their days with meaningless activities rather than living authentically. Veronica's story challenges us to stop waiting for perfect conditions to pursue our dreams. Today is the miracle we overlook. This moment, this breath, these are the gifts we squander while fixating on tomorrow. Veronica had to confront death to discover how to truly live.